Now, in the studio, we have Alice Fowler. Hello, Alice. How are you today?
Hi, Dave. I'm very well indeed. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Now, fortunately for me, Alice contacted us about her book, which is called The Truth Has Arms and Legs, and gave me a copy to read, and I absolutely adore your book. It is so nice to read this book. It's just lovely. This is a book of short stories.
Yes.
I'll just read you off the back here where it says, "This beguiling short story collection explores the pivotal moments that transform our lives. Jenny, whose life is defined by small disasters, discovers a bigger, more generous version of herself. A traveller girl might just win her race and alter her life's course. A widow cut off in a riverside backwater opens her heart to a stranger. A captivating collection by award-winning writer." Yeah, you win lots of awards. I can see why you win lots of awards. Worth it. "Readers will be moved by the raw vulnerability of human connection and the resilience that allows us to grow and thrive in the face of hardship." I love the book. Now, I did think I was going to ask you about the title, but having read the book, I know where the title comes from, and I think people should find it for themselves. Would you agree with that? Or
I'd be very happy for that to happen. Yeah. The title of the book is also the title of the last story. So
yes,
if they read the book, they will certainly understand.
Yes, you read the last story. Ah, click, it works, yes. Now, tell me why, well, at least where does the inspiration come from for starting this book of short stories?
Oh, well, I've been writing short stories for a few years. There's 12 stories in the book, and they were written over around 5 years. But I also write longer fiction. I try to write novels. So my short stories are very often a kind of a little holiday from my longer fiction.
Yeah.
The novel being the marathon and the short story being the little sprint in another direction.
Yeah.
So they really come from a place of pleasure, I would say, for me as a writer, in order to do something quite quickly and reach the end of it relatively quickly as well. That's very inspiring.
Because writing a novel is a long, long job, isn't it?
It is, yes. I'm just hopefully getting towards the end of a historical novel at the moment. But this short story collection is my first published book.
Almost all of these stories made me want to cry. And I think that is not easy to do in short story. You know, if you've got a whole book, you can do that. But short stories, that is a tricky thing to do. There's one where I didn't get the emotional hit. There's only one. It didn't work for me. And that's the one about the orchid. Now, I can understand the story and why the lead character is standing in front of the house, completely different version of her, to meet the lady inside. I can understand it intellectually, but I didn't get the emotional hit. There's something there I didn't quite get. I mean, is it cheating if I asked you to explain that one to me?
No, not at all. In fact, as you were beginning to say that, I was thinking, oh, which story is he talking about? I bet it's the one with the orchids.
Oh, right, right.
Because you are not the first person to say that to me.
Yeah.
And quite a few people have said to me, oh, yes, but I didn't really understand the ending.
Oh, wow.
So you're definitely not alone. So I have reflected quite a bit on that story. And all I can liken it to, well, for anybody who hasn't read it, it's about a woman walking on a stretch of downland looking at orchids, and she meets somebody who she knows, and that takes, from then on, the story takes quite a sinister turn. Various things unfold. She becomes under greater and greater pressure. And as I wrote that story, I really felt I was pressing on a bruise. That's the best way I can describe it. It begins with an awkward encounter, and then I was just pressing that awkwardness harder and harder and harder to sort of see what would happen.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting. One person loved that story, and that was the writer Sally Bailey, who very kindly gave me an endorsement for that book.
Yeah.
And I think she's a very experienced and accomplished author herself. And I think she liked the fact that it was, you know, a bit awkward and painful to read. She liked the narrative drive, and she liked the ending a lot. But I can see it is slightly different in tone from the others.
Is it perhaps that the ending is highly ambiguous? Whereas the other stories, there's an emotional hit, you get it.
Yeah, I think it might be actually. And I must say, as a writer of short stories, I quite like an ambiguous ending. There is a whole
leave
sort
us thinking.
Exactly. And I think something about the brevity of short stories does mean that quite often it can be a rather good thing to leave the reader wondering. There's something in a way that you read the story that might be 2,000 words or 3,000 words, but then ideally the story may live on for a bit longer in the reader's head while they try to work out what they think might have happened.
I was just thinking about the way you write, because it's quite striking for me that you write things, you write a group of sentences that don't quite make sense, then the following one explains what's been before. And then you write another group of sentences, then there's another one that explains what's come before, rather than sort of, here's what's coming next, which is more, you know, it's more common. You do it that way around. And it's very clever, because it really does make you think more when it's in that order. Do you do that deliberately?
No, not at all.
Oh, really?
No, no, that is interesting. No, I mean, I genuinely feel my writing is a sort of a creative act. And as I do it, I sometimes feel like I'm painting, you know, a little bit of this colour, a little bit of that colour, a little bit of the other colour. So maybe that explains what you've just said, actually, thinking about it. Yeah. And then hopefully by the end, it all comes together as a whole picture that works. So that might be the reason. Yeah.
It's fascinating, this. Fascinating. My favourite story, I would bet it's a lot of people's favourite story, is Something You Need to Know.
Oh. I'm really touched
I love that
to hear
one.
That.
Really?
Oh.
Oh, the hit on the end of that was just, wow, perfect.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, shall I quickly say what that story is about?
Oh, go on, up to you.
I'll briefly say. It is about a family on a beach in Greece, and they've got up very early and they're searching for hatching baby sea turtles who are going to try and make their way safely to the sea. And it's a mother, father and their young daughter. And their young daughter is caught up in this very sort of intense experience, and she wants to adopt. There's an adoption scheme going on, you know, to raise money for this. She wants to adopt a little sea turtle. And that's the point on which the story turns.
Okay, cool. That is such a lovely story. And it's so short as well, that one. But it's, yeah, perfect. That's the one I give the award to, actually.
Thank you very much.
They all deserve awards.
Thank you.
Even the orchid one, which leaves you sort of like, what? That's okay. Now, when you're writing these stories, do you write a sort of a long version and then you hone it down so you've only got the really important words? Or do you actually write it that short in the first go?
I write it that short in the first go. But not all short story writers do that. For example, I was just the other day listening to a very acclaimed short story writer called Wendy Erskine talk about her process, and it was exactly as you describe. She writes a long draft and then
hones it down.
Whereas I don't. I actually think I have quite a strong feeling for the length of a story because I used to be a journalist.
Yeah.
So I think that's going on somewhere in the background. And I just write. I mean, not to say I don't edit my stories, of course.
Yes.
I do edit them very carefully, and they may change a bit in that process. But lengthwise, it's pretty much...
The first draft looks roughly like the end article that you want.
Yeah.
And do these things pop into your head as a complete story? Got it. Or does it develop as you write it, because it is a short story?
It can happen as a complete thing, but that's fairly unusual. First story in the book, called The Race, that was the case, actually. But very often, no, I really write in a spirit of discovery myself, what's going to happen. That's really exciting as a writer. I'd say most of the stories in the book are like that. And I think, in a way, it can often be part of the secret to hopefully a good story, because if you, the writer, don't know, how on earth is the reader going to know? You know, you're really finding things out together.
And you're letting the characters tell you.
Absolutely.
Really, that's how it feels.
Oh, yes. Hopefully, yes. I mean, they are character-driven stories.
Oh, yes.
That's what I'm really trying to do, you know. I'm trying to go through layers of character. So, yes, you're kind of testing your character, you're putting your character maybe in awkward situations, you're putting the pressure on in different ways, and you're yourself discovering how they're going to respond.
Hmm. Now, I did wonder where the inspiration comes from, the different stories, because they're all so different. You've got World War II stories, World War I, effectively, all sorts of different stories about people, contemporary stories. One of them, I thought, easy guess on that one, which is the elderly lady in the care home. Did you see on TV something that sparked it and you thought, I can write a backstory for that? Or was that completely wrong?
Oh, yes, I think I probably did, because that, are you meaning the towards the end of the story where it's yes.
A bit of sign language going on.
Yes.
Here. Sorry. Sorry, listeners.
Being very
I don't want to
ruin
the story, you see, when you read it, because they're so nice.
Yes, actually, that is the case. I did. There's some very familiar footage taken during the pandemic, giving nothing away to say that. And yes, I did see that. It really stayed in my head. And then I, did write the backstory for that.
Brilliant. Now, but the other ones, is it fair to say the inspiration comes from all sorts of different sources?
Yes, it is.
Because
it really
such
is.
Because they're varied stories, right?
Definitely. Some come from setting. The story you mentioned, Something You Need to Know, very much stems from setting. And there's another one like that, that's set in a little riverside cafe in a village in Cornwall. That story sprang entirely from the setting. But others, sometimes it's things I read, sometimes it's things I might see on television. Occasionally it's something that's happened to me, and just a small thing that's happened to me, but it might lodge in my head. And then I use that as the springboard for a completely different story.
Hey, so the one you mentioned, the cafe in Cornwall, it's a real place.
Yes, it's a real place. It really does. It's a DIY cafe where you come in and you tea and coffee and cake are all there, and you make it yourself, and you put some money in a honesty box at the end.
What a nice way of doing things.
Very nice. But I have to say, a bit sadly, it's the village where my mother used to live, so I know it well. And I went back recently and made a special pilgrimage to this cafe because, having written about it, it's kind of quite special to me.
Yeah.
And I was a bit sad to find it didn't exist anymore.
Oh.
Had been shut down. So hoping it might reopen. Yeah. So they are a moment in time, the stories. You know, various things have made me realise that being one of them, really.
Wow. It's a lovely story, that one. And very unexpected. Okay, I have to complain about something. Sorry about this. Ooh. I have to complain. In one of the stories, you mention turtle eggs look like pink fur potatoes. I grow pink fur potatoes. They are long and knobbly. They do not look like turtle eggs. What happened?
Oh, well, they do when they're hatched. That's the point, because I've grown pink fur potatoes as well.
So, and they're long and knobbly.
They are long and knobbly. But they're, once, I agree, I mean, the turtle eggs are oval.
Yeah.
But once they've hatched, and in the story, quite a lot of them have hatched or been eaten by foxes.
Sort of,
and they kind of unfold and they scrunchle up, and they go a sort of pinkish colour as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have seen them, and I would argue they do
pink
fur potatoes.
You win that one.
Thank you. I was very worried. What were you going to say there?
Which is your favourite story? Have you got one?
Oh, thank you. Well, I must say, I do really like The Wraith.
The first story.
That is the first story, and that's about a gypsy girl in 1920s Surrey in the Hurtwood, who is running a race barefoot against the village girls in shoes. And that story is my favourite because a lot of, I think a lot of me and my sort of trajectory through life went into that story. And also that story did win the Historical Writers Association Short Story Prize in 2020. And that was a very big thing for me. That was the first time any story had won a prize. It's quite a prestigious prize. So it really just altered my perception of what I could do. You know, it boosted my confidence. And that is probably, as a writer, that's the most valuable thing of all.
Okay, right, awards. So, Elizabeth Goodge Trophy runner-up, Exeter Story Prize long-listed, Wales Festival of Literature Short Story Competition winner, Cutting Hedge Creativity Multimedia Competition winner, Stylist Feminist Fiction Prize long-listed, Dorothy Dunnett Short Story Competition winner, Harper's Bazaar Short Story Competition shortlisted. People love your stories, you know. And did you say this is the third reprint of your book?
It is, yes, yes. Yes.
Wonderful. So a lot of people are getting the pleasure of reading these books. And it is a real pleasure. Each story is such a pleasure reading these. Now, you said you're working on a long novel. Now, it does say on your website, an unconventional love story in mid-Victorian Surrey. Ooh, and you said you're getting close to the end?
I hope so. I've been working on it, you know, for some years now.
Yeah?
Yes, it's set in Guildford. Guildford is where I live. And it is inspired by two real-life characters who lived in mid-Victorian Guildford.
Yeah.
One is a former army sergeant and one is a cobbler. And I have invented an entirely fictional story involving these two characters and a woman who, in many ways, is drawn to them both. So it's a story that explores identity, different issues of identity, and explores the boundaries between friendship and love. I've just had an amazing week, actually, away in a residential library in Wales called the Gladstone Library, which is a place where writers go when they need to not think about anything apart from their great sprawling work.
Yeah.
And I've been lucky enough to just do it. So I've really had the opportunity to get my head round it all. I made a lot of progress. So I'm hoping now I can get it over the line.
I've never ever heard anybody say I spent a week in a library. I believe you though.
I really did. It was like a very, very, very long essay crisis. I barely saw daylight. I barely ate, but I really did work hard. So that was what I wanted to do.
That's what you want. That's your idea of a holiday.
Yeah.
Right. Now, so that your book is available on Amazon, also on Fly on the Wall Press, who advertise themselves as a publisher with a conscience, ethical, political and accessible books. I guess that's why you picked them, is it?
It is certainly one of the reasons, yes. Yeah. That was very important to me. There's quite a lot of talk in book circles about how books physically are produced and the impact on the environment. So the fact that this publisher tries to, you know, use environmentally responsible inks and paper and so on was certainly important to me. I'm quite passionate about the environment, as you may possibly tell from the stories. There's quite a lot of nature running through them. So, yes, and it's a very small publisher. It's based in Manchester. It's run by a very dynamic young woman called Isabel Kenyon, who I think is in her 20s. But it's been a real delight to work very closely with her. She's been very supportive and we've had a very good sort of working rapport, I would say. So the whole process actually has been delightful. You know, when I wrote those stories, I didn't think that they would ever end up as a published collection. So for that to happen has been really, truly very special.
Fabulous, because obviously people do love your story. Certainly I love the story. So if people want to know more about you, you've got a website, haven't you, which is?
Yes, that's alicefowlerauthor.com. The publisher's website is flyonthewallpress.co.uk, and you can buy the book directly from the publisher. That's very much supports this small publisher, which is a good thing. As Dave says, it's also on Amazon. It's also available from Waterstones, and you should really be able to walk into your local bookshop, and if it's not on the shelf, you should be able to order it. So there's quite a lot of ways to get hold of it.
Right. And if people want to contact you, they can do that through the website, can't they? You've got a contact page.
That's right.
They want to talk to you.
Yes, certainly.
The Truth Has Arms and Legs by Alice Fowler, a series of short stories. And if you make it all the way through the book, which you will, and read number 12, then you go, ah, oh, that's where the title comes from. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you. And thank you very much for the book. Fantastic. Love it, of course.
Oh, thank you very much, Dave. It's been a great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, Slavin.